Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, our weekly adventures in old-time radio here from the Radio Theater Channel. Well, today we're going to have detectives, private ones, and I guess you'd call them police detectives. First, we'll start with a private. This is the Sam Spade program, the Dry Martini Caper from 1948.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, how did it go?
It was the end, Effie, but the end.
Oh, Sam, not another one of those society things.
Depends on what you mean by society.
Well, you know, Sam, cafe society. Cocktails for two, hands across the table. Make it another old-fashioned, please.
Let's not lose our head, Effie. Nothing but double martinis, very dry, with two olives, sweetheart.
Two olives?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Sam, isn't that overdoing it?
It was all overdone, sweetheart. That's what cracked it. Now, stay right where you are. I'll be right down to mix up my report on the dry martini caper. Get it?
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. August is always a great vacation month. And for those of you planning to take your vacation soon, let me suggest that when you're packing, be sure you include a bottle and a handy tube of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. For no matter where you go, you can always depend on Wild Root Cream Oil to groom your hair neatly and naturally, relieve dryness, and remove loose dandruff. Yes, you can take it with you on your vacation, and you should. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Wise as an owl, sober as a judge, F.
Oh. Well, the way you talked on the phone, I thought you drowned the shamrock, kissed the Black Betty, spliced the main brace, decorated the mahogany, made a Dutch bargain, or, in a word, gone to give a Chinaman a music lesson.
Effie, I wish you'd spend more time with Harper's Bazaar while I'm gone and less with the thesaurus of slang.
Ah.
Didn't know I could say that. Are you sober?
Well, I've been riding the choo-choo, drinking Adam's ale. And if you don't believe it, just ask me to walk a chalk.
Okay, heelsy-toesy, arms akimbo, eyes glazed.
Yes, Sam.
Now then, tip of the forefinger to the tip of the nose.
Oh. Oh, Sam, it makes me dizzy.
Dizzy Gillespie?
Dizzy go. Oh, Sam.
Exactly. And you are not sewn up, shagged, shellacked, chickered, stuccoed, tap-shackled, stiffo, or real crazy.
Well, you know best, Sam.
Good. Now try this one.
Yes, Prez.
Sitting posture, limbs cruciform.
What?
Cheesecake style.
Oh, Sam.
That's it. Now place the notebook. Just a little higher. Good. Yeah. Now apply the tip of the pencil to the top of the fool's cap and proceed viz.
Viz.
Date. August 1st, 1948. To Mrs. Netta Martini, 1000 Marina Boulevard, San Francisco. From Samuel Spade, license number 127596. Subject, Dear Netta. The first I knew of the caper was day before yesterday morning when I saw your husband's picture in the paper. It was one of those lovingly retouched executive-type photographs of a man in his late 40s or early 50s, graying at the temples and wearing an embalmed man of distinction look. The story was headlined, Corporation Head Waylaid by Mysterious Assailant. Chauffeur foils would-be kidnappers at offices of Martini Trading Company. The item under it wasn't as thrilling as the headline. Sounded as if he'd been knocked down for his wallet and the attempted kidnapping had been dreamed up by a bored city news reporter. I tossed it into the wastebasket along with my morning mail and went back to the Police Gazette. On page 3, the phone rang. Unique Garage, Harry speaking.
Mr. Spade?
One moment. Who's calling?
Gordon Martini.
Not Gordon Martini, the corporation head, waylaid by a mysterious assailant.
Chairman of the board, and there's nothing mysterious about it.
Then what are you doing on this phone?
I can't talk on the phone.
Where are you? In a hospital?
I left that pest house this morning. I'm at my residence, 1000 Marina Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
It will take you exactly 20 minutes by cab. You will meet me in front of the building, and we'll have our conference in my car en route to the office.
Where's your office?
Downtown Post Street.
Oh, why don't I meet you there?
I'm a busy man. Have a full calendar. I'm already late due to all that hospital red tape, but I can fit you into my schedule if you'll hurry. Now, look alive, man.
Well, it's a little early in the morning, but I'm trying hard.
Good. What will you want for a retainer?
I'll let you know if I decide to take the job.
Fair enough. 20 minutes. I'll expect you.
I should have looked more alive. It took me 2 minutes to get onto the street, 1 minute to flag down a cab, and 18 minutes to reach your address, Netta. A total of 21 minutes. As my taxi drew up to the curb in front of the canopied entrance to the corner apartment house at 1000 Marina, I saw your husband pacing indignantly up and down in front of the entrance, pausing only to glare at the outsized chronometer on his left wrist. His gray Homburg was perched atop an outsized turban of gauze bandage that decorated his head.
Ah, you're Spade. You're exactly 1 minute and 22 seconds late. Hours are made of minutes, minutes are made of seconds. In killing this seemingly negligible interval of time, you have wounded an hour.
Oh, I have. Well, I'm sorry. The traffic's pretty heavy out here this hour of the morning, you know.
You should have started a minute and 22 seconds earlier.
I'm sorry there was a bore on the telephone, kept talking about how valuable his time was.
Well, don't apologize. Only waste more time. Now, here's your check, $100. My car's just around the corner. I paid that chauffeur a large salary. We mustn't keep him waiting. In the meantime, you may as well start earning your fee.
I've been earning it for the past 22 minutes and 22 seconds.
Wait. I suspected as much. Do you drive a car?
Yeah, you mean one man drives all that?
I see him, that rascally chauffeur of mine. Sleep in the back seat. All right, come out of there, you. Hey, watch!
I was behind him and a little to the right. The shock of the rapid-fire 30-caliber slugs lifted him off his feet and knocked him against me. I went down under his 300 pounds of dead weight. By the time I rolled him off of me and got up, the gunman had jumped out of the limousine and into a gray sedan that was double-parked alongside. In the welter of traffic on the boulevard, I didn't dare risk throwing a shot after him, but I did get the first three numbers of the license plate before it buried itself in the heavy stream of AM commuters. That's when the air changed from exhaust fumes to something out of a Persian garden. I turned and looked for the first time into your Nile green eyes, Netta, and saw you twisting a handkerchief in your pale hands I might have loved beside the Shalimar, but on Marina Boulevard, they look like hysterics dead ahead.
Who did it? You saw him. Don't lie to me. Why don't they come with the ambulance? Why are all those people standing around there staring at me? Make them go
calm
away.
Down.
Make them go away. I can't stand it.
Now, stop it, will you? That's better. Now, come on over here. Who are you? His wife?
Yes. And it was all my fault. This is the end. I called Ernie out the window and asked him to come upstairs. I wanted him to return some lingerie. They sent the wrong color, peach.
Yeah. Who's Ernie?
He's our chauffeur. I was looking for the exchange slip when we heard the shots. Is he dead this time?
Yeah. Don't go to pieces.
Poor Gordon. He had so many enemies. He didn't drink well, you know. People dropped us like flies.
Well, they certainly dropped your husband.
Are you a policeman?
No, but I'll do until the real thing comes along, which is right now. If I were you, lady, I'd go back upstairs and relax. They'll get to you soon enough.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Poor Gordon, he looks so natural stretched out on the pavement.
Yeah.
I keep thinking he'll get up and stagger on into the elevator. He didn't drink at all well.
Go on, will you?
All right, I'm going. Oh, Ernie, where did you go?
Down to the garage. I heard a car driving. Poor Mr. Martini, it's all my fault.
No, Ernie, it's mine. If I only hadn't mislaid that exchange slip.
What?
You know, when I called you out the window to come and get that package.
Oh, that.
What do we got here? Who's the witness?
Me.
Oh, Spade. Lost another client, huh?
Not quite. I hadn't cashed the check yet.
Well, they got him anyway. All right, clear a space in there. Let him through with that stretcher.
Step over here out of the crowd, Sam. I want to get this statement.
Yeah. Okay, Gary, take it down.
Got a pencil?
Yeah, and I want it back.
Let's have it.
This guy is Gordon Martini.
Mm-hmm.
He headed up a local firm, the Martini Trading Company.
Yeah.
Last night he was working late at his office. Got boinged.
All right.
Phoned me this morning. Didn't know why. Thought maybe he wanted a bodyguard. Anyway, he needed one.
Mm-hmm.
Gunman was crouched in the back seat of the limousine, shoved the carbine out when Martini opened the door.
Carbine, huh?
Didn't get a good look at him. You can see why, the way it's closed in. No side windows.
Mm-hmm. Foreign car, isn't it?
Stop drooling. You can't afford one. You getting all this?
What about the getaway?
Martini fell on top of me. I saw the getaway car on the back of his head.
Yeah.
The car was a gray sedan. The back of his head was a standard make, too. Only got the first three digits of license plate, 5D9.
5D9. Anything else?
Yeah, give me back my pencil. The homicide boys want some help. They know my fee.
Mr. Spade.
Mrs. Martini. Why aren't you and Ernie upstairs getting your alibis shaped up?
Oh, please, I can't face the questions just yet. Would it be legal if I just avoided them till I can collect myself?
I don't know about legal, but it might be smart.
Where can we talk?
What do you suggest?
Well, there's a little cocktail lounge up on Lombard where Ernie and I all... it's just around the corner.
Very handy. Let's go.
Against my mother's advice, I should have listened, but, well, that's why I married Mr. Martini.
Well, that brings us up to 1943, and it's only 11:45.
You're just like him, always holding a stopwatch over my head.
Always?
Well, he drank, you know.
You told me that.
But it's much more important than you think. He often fell down and bumped his head.
You mean that mysterious assailant that waylaid him last night in his office was a double martini?
Two pitchers full before dinner.
Two?
Ernie had to carry him up to his office.
Well, what did he go up there for?
Oh, he had an appointment with the vice president of the firm, Mr. Nesbitt. Something had come up, and he wanted Gordon to sign some papers. I don't know what. It wasn't the first time. I waited outside in the car. After Ernie had taken him upstairs, he came back to the car, and we talked.
Mm-hmm. Ernie has alibis upstairs, downstairs, and all around the house.
Well, then when the others came out and Gordon didn't, Ernie went upstairs to see why.
Others? Mr. Nesbitt and who else?
Mary Callahan.
Secretary?
No, she's an attorney. And if you think everything was legal between those two, well... but after all, who am I to call the kettle black?
Now, what are you trying to tell me? That you got him drunk so they could make him sign some papers? That he got himself drunk so he couldn't write his name? Or that he just got drunk and fell down?
Between you and me, I think she pushed him down a flight of stairs. In his condition, he'd never remember.
Why are you putting a finger on the Callahan dame?
Well, what would you think? She was the last one out of the building.
Why didn't you want to tell all this to the police?
Well, I didn't want to talk about his drinking. Things were bad enough already. That would have been the end.
Well, that's as good an answer as any. What do you want me to do for you?
Prove that she did it and Ernie didn't.
I'll let you take care of Ernie.
Oh, no. I don't want to alibi him unless I have to. He might get the wrong idea.
You mean I've got the wrong idea?
He might think it meant I still care for him, and I don't. I can't stand him anymore. The way he chews those toothpicks. And besides, if his alibi is too good, I might have trouble about that car being in the backseat of my car.
Pardon me, it sounded as if you said you might have trouble about a car being in the back seat of your car.
That's what I said.
Where is your car?
In the garage. But somebody had it out this morning. They scraped the fender coming back in and they ran into the wall. They must have been in an awful hurry.
Tell me, this car of yours, it wouldn't be a gray sedan?
Yes.
License number?
Oh, wait a minute. It's on my key ring. Here, 5D90...
That's enough. Why didn't you tell me this before?
Well, I couldn't get up the nerve. After I heard you tell that policeman the gun that killed Gordon was a carbine, and the gray sedan and all that, well, it's the end.
I hoped you were right, but I didn't think so. When I went to look at the gray sedan in your garage, I knew you were wrong, dead wrong. It was the getaway car, all right, and the carbine, as you know, was proven later to be the one that killed your husband. But Ernie had turned into a very poor suspect indeed. He was hugging the carpet between the front and rear seats, and when I nudged him, he didn't move. He'd been shot at closer range than Gordon Martini, and the killer had used only one slug. It was planted in the base of his brain, which made him not only a very poor suspect, but a very dead one.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead socially and on the job? Listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And no wonder. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms the hair neatly and naturally, relieves annoying dryness, and removes loose dandruff. What's more, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil is the only leading hair tonic that contains soothing lanolin. So ask for Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too. And mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. And now, back to the Dry Martini Caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Sorry, Mr. Nesbitt is in conference. I'll see that he gets your message. Well, what can I do for you?
I would like to see Miss Callahan.
Miss Callahan is in conference with Mr. Nesbitt.
Good. I would like to see them both.
But I have orders not to disturb them.
You do not have to. I will.
Just a minute. You can't go breaking in like that.
Yes, and I'll tell you something else. He won't ever get away with it. Why, everyone in this town knows about your underworld connection.
Why, you doddering old fool, when I get through with you, if you don't go to the gas chamber for Gordon Martini's murder, you'll wish you had.
If I go to the gas chamber, it'll be for killing you, not Gordon.
Oh, you said it. Oh, why didn't I have witnesses here?
Miss Callahan?
Oh. Did you hear that?
You weren't talking loud enough. I didn't hear a thing.
Well, come on in here, and I'll tell you a thing or two. Close that door. Now, sit down.
Thanks. I listen better on my feet.
Oh, so you're the detective Netta Martini employed, eh? What's she paying you?
That'll depend on how much I have to do for her.
Well, I'll tell you how much you'll have to do for her. You'll have to make a case against me, and that's not going to be easy.
Why do you think she's out to get you?
Why, indeed. For years, this moth-eaten mouthpiece, this parboiled Porsche, has been victimizing poor Gordon, taking advantage of his weakness for drink.
No,
now that she's liquidated him, she appears with 55% of the common stock. Motive enough, eh?
Why, well, you fraudulent old fool. I simply bought up his debts and threw an attachment on those stocks. Unethical, but perfectly legal.
Look,
you're not even a proper thief. You're nothing but a bumbling old embezzler.
Now, listen
here.
You had
to tell because he was going to call in the auditors to look over those books of yours. The Dean of Double Entry, Mr. Spade.
Look, will you save this for the courtroom scene? Now, you've convinced me. You're both crooked. I'll see that you both go up for something. That's a promise.
Oh, Mr. Spade, I gave you credit for better sense. Do you know that this Medusa of the magistrate's court, this harpy of the Hall of Justice...
Well,
tricked him into changing the beneficiary of his insurance the very night she pushed him down the stairs.
And you were all in favor of it when you thought you held the controlling interest in the company. Answer that. You see, Mr. Spade, he can't answer that.
Good. I'm glad one of you is temporarily at a loss for words. Now, I only want to know one thing, and I want a straight answer. And if either one of you starts off on another speech, I'm going to push you into the nearest cloakroom and lock you in together.
Why, you wouldn't dare.
Try me, sweetheart.
Well, what do you want to know about this Amazon ambulance chaser, this Trilby of the traffic course?
Watch it.
Well, what do you want to know?
About Martini's insurance policy. Now, you say he changed the beneficiary. Please answer in 10 words or less. Who was the beneficiary, and who is the beneficiary now?
I'll have to answer that question in 2 parts. The beneficiary was his wife. He changed it to the Martini Trading Company, a corporation of the state of California.
Thank you, and goodbye, Mary Callahan. And that Netta took the heat off of you for the time being, which made things tough for me. Because Callahan and Nesbitt were so horrible, I never wanted to see them again, even to testify against them in court. I was sure of one thing. None of you would pull the trigger of that carbine. There'd been a hired killer behind it, and the way he operated, taking crazy chances in broad daylight in a crowded street, told me an important thing about him. That night, I made the rounds of the joints. At a plant called the Bing Room, I found a bouncer who'd tossed out a customer that run up a bill and tried to pay it with a $1,000 check. He sent me to the Atlas Hotel. The Atlas Hotel is off of 3rd Street, down near the railroad yards. Not even a flea bag. The fleas sickened and died a long time ago. They couldn't take it. And from the look of the guests sprawled out in the mission furniture of the lobby, they wouldn't be able to much longer. A half-dead room clerk came back to the land of the living long enough to mutter a room number and wave me feebly toward a flight of crummy stairs.
Yeah, what do you want?
You Hack Hartman?
Hey, you got anything for me, huh?
Yeah, I got news for you. Get back in the room. I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, well, come on in.
Drop the shiv.
Yeah, I'll drop it. I'll fix you. I'll cut you good. I'll cut you.
I'm glad you did that. You make it easy for me. Now get over there.
Leave me alone. I'm not feeling so good.
You can feel a lot worse. Who hired you to put the burn on Martini?
You don't get nothing out of me.
Who gave you that check?
Oh, leave me alone.
I got all night, Hack, and I feel better than you do. Now, what did you do with that check? I'll shake it if your teeth come out with it. Come on.
All right. Stop it. I don't feel so good.
Okay. Where?
Pocket. My shirt.
Don't reach. I'll get it. It was a company check, which is what I'd expected. It was for $1,000 drawn in the Golden Gate Trust and Loan. But I wasn't expecting to find the signature on the bottom line. It was signed in a bold, firm hand, Gordon Martini. Who was the penman on this?
He wrote it himself, right in front of me.
What was it supposed to be for?
He wanted I should knock off his brother.
You get mixed up?
He's dead, ain't he?
That's what I mean. Gordon Martini's dead.
The papers got it wrong. That was his brother, his twin brother. And that other guy, that chauffeur, kept hanging around the garage so I couldn't get out. I had to burn him, too.
You know what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm making sense. Now get out of here. I'm getting steamed.
Don't let it worry. I got a nice, cool place all picked out for you. After I turned Hack over to the cops, I did what checking I could on my own at that time of night. As nearly as I could learn, Gordon Martini could never have had a brother, twin or otherwise. He was a first child, his mother died in childbirth, and his father died 1 month later. So I went back to the offices of the Martini Trading Company, glass-keyed my way in, and made a quick frisk of it. There I learned that the signature on the check was indeed Gordon's, but that he had closed out his account at that bank the day he wrote it. I thought about that on the way out to your apartment.
Sam, I've been calling and calling, trying to reach you. I've been so worried. It's the end.
This time, you might be right. Fix me a drink.
Well, there's nothing in the house but those prepared martinis Gordon used to drink. Is that all right?
No, but fixing me one anyway. Never mind the ice. It's not morning yet, but I hate myself already.
Why don't you just relax and let me get it for you?
I'll relax. You get the martinis.
What happened? What'd you think of Mary Callahan? Isn't she the end?
She's cute. You're all cute.
All of me? How nice.
I put ice in anyway. It's nasty without.
It's nasty anyway.
I hope it doesn't make you fall down the way it did poor Gordon.
Thanks.
What? Well, what's the matter? Too dry?
You open this bottle fresh?
Why, yes. What's the matter?
Where are they? The rest of the bottles. Oh, yeah. More of the same. Is this all your husband ever drank?
Yes, gallons of it. It's a special brand. He even took it with him to bars and people's houses. He'd sit and drink them right out of the bottle like a little child. Then he'd be falling down drunk, of course. And that's how we lost so many friends. They dropped us like
flies. Yeah, it was the end.
Who are you phoning?
City morgue.
Maxie, Sam Spade.
Sammy, what can I do on you?
On Martini, Maxie. They got around to the autopsy yet?
Yeah, they rushed him through.
Got the report handy?
Right in front of me. Funny thing, Sam. The doc said they should have saved themselves the trouble. He'd have been dead in a week or two without no help.
What from?
Brain tumor. Malignant, it says here.
Any alcohol in him?
None from drinking, Sammy.
What about the head wounds?
Accidental fall due to periodic fainting spells. Part of his condition.
Thanks, Maxie.
Well, what is it, Sam? Were the martinis poisoned?
No, sweetheart. The martinis were colored water.
Why, they couldn't. Well, what made him get so drunk?
He didn't. He was sick.
But, Sam, who killed him?
He killed himself.
But he couldn't have.
He hired a gunman to do it. He planned his own murder.
But that was... Well, why didn't he leave a note or something? He could have ruined us all.
Come here, sweetheart. Put your little hand on Uncle Sam's shoulder.
Why, Sam...
That's, just what he wanted you to do. He wanted to ruin you. He let Mary Callahan fleece him out of his interest in the company. He let Nesbitt juggle the books. He let you go your way with Ernie. You let all three of you fix yourselves up with as nice a set of motives for murder as a jury could ask for.
Oh, he couldn't have.
The real joker was the check he used to pay off the man he hired to kill him. It bounced. It also proved he'd planned his own murder. But he still has his revenge. Because the insurance that would have kept the corporation from going broke won't be paid off on account of the self-liquidating cause.
Oh, Sam, darling, what's going to become of us all?
Well, Callahan and Nesbitt will probably sue each other to death. You might have to go to work and earn a living.
Well, I have $500. I might invest it in something.
You already have. Here's my bill.
But, Sam, you didn't help me. Why, this is the end.
No, it isn't, sweetheart. This is the beginning. Come here. Period. End of the end.
Well, you ask me. You helped her.
Now, F.
Well, that just goes to show you.
Show what, F?
Man's ingratitude to man.
Hmm?
What did Mr. Martini have against you?
Why, nothing, sweetheart. He, just needed a smart operator like, well, no, Johnny Madero was on
vacation.
Sam. Hmm?
Have you cashed that check Mr. Martini gave you?
Well, not yet.
Sam, any bartender would know better than to take a check from a man who drinks that much?
F, you haven't been paying attention. He didn't drink. He didn't. I was able to establish that later on.
Well,
you haven't been listening.
Well, at the time, Sam, for all anybody knew, he was a hopeless drunk. He was, Sam. Oh, you're so wonderful and trusting. But I do wish that you'd understand this. He was a hopeless drunk.
For the last time, Effie, he didn't really drink.
I'll just type this up, Sam, while you call the bank.
I'll do that.
A final reminder, friends. Whether you're going on a long vacation trip or just a weekend to the beach, be sure you've got a bottle and tube of Wild Root Cream Oil tucked away in your suitcase. Do this, and you'll find it's easy and quick to spruce up again after stepping out of the water or off the tennis court. For no matter where or when you use it, Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, removes loose dandruff. So at home and away from home, help yourself to handsome hair with Wild Root Cream Oil. And next time you have a chance, ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Well, here it is, Sam. I hope it was worth the price of the paper and carbons.
You made carbon copies of that, an unimportant report like that?
Oh, it bounced?
Well, the estate isn't settled yet.
Oh, Sam, you're so wonderful and trusting.
Effie, I am not wonderful and trusting. I am a hard-boiled private eye.
I know. Just a pity there's no money in it.
And I'm also two-fisted.
Sam.
Hmm?
Have you ever thought of ceramics?
Of what?
Ceramics. It takes virtually no capital. All you need is a small furnace and some clay. And if you don't have any talent, you can just make ashtrays.
Thanks, I already have one.
Oh, flower pots are fun. You can pot them on a wheel.
And you can pot your hat on and wheel on out of here and also take your furnace and clay.
Oh, I love you when you're so gay and carefree.
I am not gay and carefree.
You are a hard-boiled private eye. Good night, Sam.
Good night, and sue me for your back salary, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. Gil Dowd directed tonight's broadcast in William Spear's absence. Join us again next Sunday for another adventure with Sam Spade, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. This is Dick Joy reminding you to
get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie, keeping all the gals away.
Hiya, Baldy. Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Sam Spade, the Dry Martini Caper from 1948. Now for our second program, this is, I guess you'd call him a public detective. This is Tales of the Texas Rangers and the Devil's Share. This is from 1950.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles. 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. Now, from the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, The Devil's Share.
It is 6:45 p.m., October 26, 1939. Frank Whalen, a dirt farmer, is sitting down to his simple evening meal when the door to the kitchen opens and his brother, Jeff Whalen, comes in.
Well, howdy, Jeff. Thought you was going to spend a couple of weeks up at Big D.
So I changed my mind and come back. Any law against that?
Didn't say there was. Yeah, just fix and eat. I'll get your plate.
Stop playing big, brother. I won't eat. I can rustle my own grub. You can call that fat back and beans grub.
What's the matter with you anyhow, Jeff?
Nothing. Just leave me alone.
You've been acting like this for quite a spell. Thought taking a trip would do you some good. Jeff, why'd you come back?
I met Luther Riggs up in Big D. He told me you and Ma Jan was fixing to get married.
Oh. So that's it.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because of the way you've been acting. I was going to tell you when you come back.
You should have had a talk with me, Frank. Ma Jan used to be my girl, remember?
Used to be, ain't now, Jeff.
Maybe you should have asked me a few things about Ma Jan. Maybe there's a couple of things you ought to know.
Anything I want to know about Ma Jan, she'll tell me herself. As far as you're concerned, ain't nothing to tell.
No, huh? You ought to learn a little about women, Frank. You might learn a lot if you didn't spend so many days looking at the rear end of a mule, so many nights poking your nose into that Bible of yours.
If it's hurt me any, I reckon I'll find out when judgment comes. Meantime, I ain't taking your word for it.
Meantime, you ain't bringing Marjan here either. Maybe you're forgetting it. I'm half owner of this farm.
You never prove it by anything you grew here.
The law says I'm half owner with or without growing anything. You want to bring a wife here, you better buy me out. You can have my share for $2,000 and good riddance.
Jeff, you got yourself a deal. I'll give you 800 cash in the morning and notes for the rest.
You give me 2,000 cash in the morning.
I ain't got that kind of money and you know it.
Who do you think you're kidding? You had a good crop. You got that much in the bank right now.
Yeah, I got it. And almost half of it belongs to old Uncle Joe for working on shares. Work you wouldn't raise a hand to do.
I don't care about you or Uncle Joe. Let him wait, not me.
Jeff, get this. And get it straight. Uncle Joe is going to get every nickel that's coming to him whenever and however he wants it. He's worked for it.
Okay, Frank. I just guess you, me, and Ma Jan gonna live here like one big happy family. Maybe Ma Jan liked that more than you think.
You! Jeff, if you wasn't my brother, I'll get your money for you, somehow. I'll get it and you can clear out. I wouldn't have Ma Jan around dirt like you for $1,000,000.
Oh, she used to be mighty fond of dirt like me.
Jeff, shut up, I tell you! Don't say nothing else, Jeff. Don't open your mouth. It's only remembering when we was kids together and the memory of Ma and Pa that's keeping me
that's
from beating you.
That's too bad. Because I ain't like you. Memories don't bother me at all. You ain't going to do anything to me, Frank. And I'm going to get what I want and I'm going to get it all now, including Ma Jane.
Jeff! Put that bread knife back on the table.
I took a knife to you once before, Frank. Pa stopped me that time. But Pa ain't around anymore.
Give me that knife, Jeff!
No!
Hey,
I bet you sure wish Paul was here this time.
until next morning before reporting the death of his brother Frank to the local sheriff. The sheriff asked for the assistance of a Texas Ranger. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned to the case.
Well, Jace, I went all over the place earlier this morning when I was called here, and now you've been all over it. If you see anything, I must have missed it.
Doesn't seem to be much to see except the body.
Want to talk to the brother now? He's still waiting in the parlor.
Yeah, I know. I'll see him in a minute. Look at the table where Frank Whalen was eating. I was cutting his bread from this whole loaf. Crumbs show that. It was a sharp, clean cut. This eating knife's the only one on the table, though. That's not sharp enough to slice the bread that way.
He might have cut the bread, then put the knife away.
It's possible, but it doesn't figure.
No, it doesn't. Fella sits down to his food, he don't put nothing away until he's through.
And Whalen wasn't through. From the looks of it, he just started to eat.
What you looking in the drawers for?
Murder weapon, maybe. Something like this bread knife?
Could be, I guess, but that knife's clean.
Yeah, too clean. Look at the blade and the handle.
Well, what about them? Well,
the other knives in this drawer don't shine like this one. This one's got special treatment.
Hey, I see what you're driving at. You figured it was rubbed with a scouring pad to remove blood, maybe, huh?
That's something we'll have to find out, but it's worth a bet. It's been cleaned up too well to help us any, though. Well, we might as well put it back in the drawer.
Seems like that knife's the only thing we got to go on, Jace. And we're not even sure of that.
I know. We better have a talk with Whalen's brother right now.
Sure, but Jeff won't be able to help much.
Why not?
He just got back from Dallas early this morning. Called me as soon as he found the body.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, we might as well see him anyhow.
Marjane Galt's in the parlor with him, Jace.
Who's she?
And Marjane and Frank Whalen was fixing to get married. Folks tried to keep her away when the news got out, but she came anyhow.
Yeah, it's just as well. She might know something.
She's broke up pretty bad. Parlor's here. Sliding door, I'll open it. Jeff, the ranger'd like to talk to you and Marjane now.
When can I see Frank? I want to see him now.
I think it'd be better if you didn't, ma'am.
For your own good, Marjane.
Last night. Only last night I was home. I was sewing pillowcases.
No, come on. Please, Marjane. Love, do you have to talk to him? I can tell you anything you want to know.
All right. But I think you'd better come into the next room, then.
Okay.
Ma'am, why don't you just stretch out on that sofa and rest? All right, Jeff. When did you find your brother's body?
Well, like I told the sheriff, by 5 o'clock this morning when I come home.
He was killed last night around dinner time. Where were you then?
On the road, I reckon. I've been up to Big Dave for the last 5-6 days.
You drive back?
Didn't have nothing to drive back in. I hitch rides. Come back, same way I went.
And got here at 5 a.m.? When'd you leave Dallas?
Well, yesterday afternoon, I guess, about 2 o'clock. Why are you asking me this? You're supposed to be finding out who killed Frank.
Now, don't get steaming, Jeff. Ranger's got a reason for asking.
You didn't touch anything in the house when you got in?
Ranger, first thing I saw was my brother laying there on the kitchen floor. I hightailed back to the highway and called the sheriff. Waited right there till he come pick me up.
Okay. Your brother been having trouble with anybody? You know of any reason why anybody might want to kill him?
No. Nothing I can think of. Except...
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, just something come to my mind, Sheriff, but no, couldn't be him.
Couldn't be who?
Come on, Jeff. Your brother's laying dead in there. We gotta know every little thing, no matter how small.
Well, all right. Just before I left, Frank did have a little argument with Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe?
Who's he?
Old sharecropper. Been working a good piece of this farm for Frank.
What was the argument between him and Frank?
Well, old Joe claimed that Frank owed him some money from the crop. Frank said it didn't. They's both pretty hot about it.
Well, that don't sound like your brother Frank. Or Uncle Joe. Well,
I know it don't. It's probably just a misunderstanding. They straighten out. That's why I told you it wasn't worth mentioning.
When it comes to murder, anything is worth mentioning. And this sounds like it might be plenty important. Sheriff, we better ask Uncle Joe to account for his movements last night.
We haven't seen him around, but his granddaughter, Belle, might be able to tell us something. She's been standing around outside the house ever since we got here.
Look, I'd like to go back to Marjane. She needs somebody with her.
All right, go ahead. Tell Belle to come in here, will you?
All right. I'll send her right in.
Oh, just a second, Jeff.
Yeah?
You must be pretty tired. You have much trouble catching rides last night?
I got one long ride in a truck.
You know who owned the truck or anything about the driver?
Well, no. No, I didn't talk to the driver much. I slept most of the time. I think it was an out-of-state truck.
Well, truckers usually don't like sleeping rider beside them on a night haul.
Well, this fella let me sleep on the shelf up in the back of the cab.
Oh, I see. All right, send Bell in.
Okay.
You've been asking him a lot of funny questions.
Yeah, and he's been giving me a lot of funny answers.
What do you mean, Jace?
That stuff about sleeping on the shelf in a truck cab. He never slept in that suit he's wearing. It's too well pressed.
So he changed clothes when he got home this morning.
He said he ran to call you the minute he saw his brother.
You want to see me, Mr. Ranger?
Yes, Belle. Come in. Belle, you and your grandfather, Uncle Joe, you live on this farm?
Yes, sir. That little house down there near the meadow. You can see it.
Just the two of you?
Yes, sir.
Where was your grandfather last night?
He was home, sir. He don't never go no place.
Was he home all night? Where was he at dinner time?
Home, sir, honest. Only time he left was for a few minutes to bring... He didn't leave the house at all.
Hmm?
Not at no time. He didn't leave the house at all.
Belle, you're lying.
No, sir, no, I'm not.
Look, Belle, you started to say something, then you backed away
no,
from
sir,
it.
No, sir, I didn't.
Belle, if you want to help us and your grandfather, you better talk up.
I told you everything, honest, I did.
With all this going on, why isn't your grandpa around? Why'd he run off?
He didn't run off. He went to the church to pray for Mr. Frank. He loved Mr. Frank. He wouldn't ever hurt him. Mr. Frank was good to us.
Where's their church, Sheriff?
Left fork of the road this side of town, but he probably ran off someplace.
We can find out about that later if he isn't at the church. Let's go. Uncle Joe was at his church, all right. We saw him kneeling in the dim light when we opened the door. Sheriff beckoned to him, and he came out into the sunlight. Tears were streaming down his face.
I was just so impressed, Mr. Frank, Sheriff. I don't know you'd be alone with me if you didn't think so.
Where were you at dinner time last night, Uncle Joe?
Why are you asking me that, Mr. Sheriff?
Just answer the question, Uncle Joe.
You can't be figuring that I killed Mr. Frank, is you?
We just want to know where you were.
I never met Mr. Frank. He's the best man I ever knew. Why, he's even helping me so that I could buy my own strip of land and my own room.
Uncle Joe, I want an answer. And tell the truth. Belle already tried to lie for you.
Begging your pardon, Mr. Sheriff, but don't nobody never have to lie for me, sir. The truth ain't never hurt me. I ain't never hurt the truth.
Well, you'd better tell
it. Just a minute, Sheriff. Uncle Joe, did you leave your house at supper time yesterday?
Yes, sir, Mr. Ranger. I did.
Where'd you go?
To Mr. Frank's house, sir, like I did every evening, to bring him some of Belle's fresh bread for his supper.
Uncle Joe, I better tell you right now that anything you say from here on can be used against you.
Used against me for what, sir? I'm ashamed to tell.
How long did you stay there?
Mr. Frank was cooking some food. I just stayed long enough to load the bread and to fix up with him to meet him Friday at the bank so he could give me the money.
What money?
What was mine from working on shares?
Are you saying Frank Whalen was holding money of yours?
You had an argument about whether or not he owed you that money, didn't you?
Mr. Frank and me ain't never had no argument, sir. He was my good friend.
Hey, Jace, here comes one of my deputies, Ben Sloan.
Yeah, I thought he and the other boys were beating around the farm.
You know, they might have found something.
Hmm.
Howdy, Ben.
Howdy, Sheriff.
What's that you got wrapped in that newspaper?
This.
Well, how bloody nice.
Where'd you get it?
Reckon old Uncle Joe here could tell you as well as I can. We found it in the weeds, out behind his shack on Whalen's farm.
You are listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. We continue now with tonight's case, The Devil's Share, an authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
Uncle Joe stared at the bloodstained knife the deputy had found behind his house. The stare was a look of recognition.
You ever seen this knife before, Uncle Joe?
Come on, answer me.
You know he's seen it before, Sheriff. You can tell just by looking at him.
How about it, Uncle Joe?
Yes, sir, Mr. Ranger. It's mine. It's just an old whittling knife. But I never used anything else on Mr. Frank.
Uncle Joe, you're under arrest for the murder of Frank Whalen.
Mr. Sheriff, I'm telling you here, outside of God's own house, I never done it.
Think maybe you better deputize a few more men, Sheriff. We might need them.
Why? What for?
People around here thought mighty high of Frank Whalen, Jace. They aren't going to cotton to the idea of him being killed by somebody he took in and helped.
And you can't blame him for that.
I can blame anybody for anything that doesn't follow the law. You're not going to have any problem with Uncle Joe, Sheriff. I'm going to take him off your hands.
Now, hold on, Jace. He's my prisoner, and I'll guarantee his safety.
I know you'd protect him. That isn't why I'm taking him. I'll give you a receipt for him and bring him back here later.
Where are you taking him?
I'm going to radio for Unit 88, the Ranger plane, to pick us up and fly us to Austin. And you'd better hand over that knife, Ben. That goes with me. I put through my call to Camp Mabry, Austin, and the Ranger plane picked us up at the nearest airfield. Uncle Joe tightened up as we took off, and his lips moved like he was praying. After that, he relaxed.
Where are you taking me to, sir?
Ranger camp and lab at Austin, Uncle Joe. You know what a lie detector is?
No, sir.
Well, it's a kind of a machine. It's called a polygraph. It can tell whether a man is lying or telling the truth. Now, whether or not you take the test is up to you. We can't force you.
But I'm colored, folks, sir. Right on?
Yeah. It'll work all right, Uncle Joe.
If you say it's all right, Mr. Ranger, then we'll do it. I trust you, sir. He's good folks. Like Mr. Frank was.
We landed at Camp Mabry. I dropped the bloodstained knife at the lab and then took Uncle Joe upstairs to the polygraph room. He wavered a little when we seated him in the chair and fixed the bands to measure his blood pressure, pulse, and respiration.
Sir, this chair... This is an electric chair, is it?
Yeah, don't worry. It won't hurt you, Uncle Joe.
We're ready to go, Jace.
Okay. I'll be waiting in the next office.
Now, no matter what I ask you, Uncle Joe, I want you to answer yes or no. That's all, understand?
Yes, sir.
Is your name Uncle Joe?
Yes, sir.
Is Belle your granddaughter?
Yes, sir.
Do you go to church?
Yes, sir.
I waited in the next office, knowing what was happening. The technician would go through the list of questions, the simple, harmless questions that would register truthful reaction on the graph. And then he'd start to hit the questions that mattered. The questions you about Frank Whalen.
Yes, sir.
Did you have an argument with him about money?
No, sir.
Did you use a knife on him?
No, sir.
Did you kill Frank Whalen?
No, sir.
Was the knife with the blood on it yours?
Yes, sir.
Do you know how the blood got on it?
No, sir.
Is that the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's all, I guess. Now, you just stay put, Uncle Joe. I'll take those things off you in a minute.
Yes.
We're all finished, Jace.
Good. What was the reaction?
Looks like he's telling the truth, Jace, all the way down the line.
Even about not having an argument with Frank Whalen over money?
According to the graph, no argument. He wasn't lying.
Good, because that means somebody else was lying. I'm going to take him back to...
Just a second, Jace. Kenny speaking. Yeah. I'll tell him. He'll be right down. That was the lab on that knife you brought in.
Yeah, they typed the blood?
It isn't human blood, Jace. It's chicken blood.
Unit 88 flew us back to the airfield where I'd left my car and horse trailer. The sheriff had been notified that we were returning and he met us at the jail with a couple of deputies. At my request, Uncle Joe agreed to spend the night in a cell for safekeeping. Then I filled the sheriff in on what I'd found out at Austin.
Chicken blood. I don't get it, Jace. Why didn't Uncle Joe say he'd use that knife to kill a hen?
Because he didn't. That knife was planted where it was found. And whoever planted it didn't expect the investigation to go any further. Uncle Joe kept the knife in the shed behind his house. Killer got it during the night after the murder, stuck a hen with it, and tossed it in the weeds.
Have to be somebody who knew the place pretty well to find that knife and do the plant.
It was somebody who knew the place.
Frank's brother, Jeff?
Frank's brother, Jeff. What do you know about him? He ever been in any trouble?
Not around here.
We better check and find out where he stayed in Dallas and who saw him while he was there. We don't know for sure he was there.
Oh, he was there, all right.
How do you know?
Because Luther Riggs saw him. Luther just drove back from Dallas this morning. I met him about an hour ago, and he told me he'd seen Jeff there.
How long was Riggs up in Dallas?
Just overnight. Quick business trip. Why?
Didn't it seem kind of funny that Jeff hitchhiked back here in such a hurry when he could have stayed over until this morning and gotten a sure ride with somebody he knew?
Didn't think of that.
Where does Riggs live?
Farm, 4 mile out.
Let's drive out there. I want to see him.
Well, howdy, Sheriff. Come out to give me a hand with my milk?
No, thanks. Let go of that cow for a minute, Luther. I want you to meet Ranger Pearson.
Sure thing. Howdy.
Howdy. The sheriff tells me you met Jeff Whalen up in Dallas yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
When?
I reckon it was just about 9 o'clock a.m. I'd been driving most of the night to get there. Stopped for a red light, and there was Jeff just fixing across the street.
You talked to him at all?
Sure. Told him to hop in, and I'd take him wherever he was going. He said he was just drifting around, so we went and had some breakfast together.
Did he tell you he was heading back for home?
Not right off, he didn't. Sounded first like he was planning to spend quite a while in Big D. Didn't say nothing about coming home until... Well, until after I told him that Marjan's folks had told me that Marjan and Frank was getting ready to set the date.
You mean he didn't know his brother was going to get married?
Didn't seem to. Matter of fact, now that you mention it, he looked right upset when I brought it up. Maybe it was because of Frank not telling him. Or maybe it was because...
Maybe it was what? Go ahead.
I think I can answer that one, Jason. Marjan and Jeff used to walk out together about a year ago. Then Marjan sort of broke off with him. Took up with Frank later.
That's right, Ranger. But Jeff never looked like it bothered him none.
The way a man looks doesn't have anything to do with what goes on inside of him. Thanks for your help, Riggs. Come on, Sheriff.
You're welcome.
Yeah, looks like you dug up a motive, Jace.
Yeah, but we need evidence to go with it. Jeff left Dallas a lot earlier than he told us he did.
Not much chance of digging up anybody who gave him a lift, I guess.
I'd say no chance at all. There's something else we can look for, though.
What's that?
Remember my saying that his clothes didn't look like he'd slept in them or driven a long way in them?
Yeah, I do.
The only reason he'd have changed clothes would be because the things he'd been wearing might have gotten blood on him.
Well, I'm not saying you're wrong, Jace, but we combed that house. There wasn't nothing there.
No. They'll be on the farm someplace.
What makes you think so?
Jeff couldn't risk being seen around any place last night. Any move he'd make would have to be on foot. He had no other way. So it's a good bet he stuck close by the farm until he called you this morning. I got my horse in the trailer. We'll pick up one for you and take another look around.
Jace, we've been out here half the night. I don't think we're going to find anything.
Maybe not.
Come on back to my place and let's hit the sack. When we wake up, we can start out fresh.
I don't want to wait too long. If we come here by daylight, Jeff will see us looking.
Well, I'm beat. Can't we just go into the trees over yonder and rest a while?
Yeah, I guess so. It'll be dawn in about 2 hours. We can move faster then with a little light.
Good. Come on, boy, over to the trees. We'll all take a breather.
Come on, Sharky. Into the trees, dismounted and hobbled the horses. The sheriff dozed off quickly, and then I began to nod. But an hour later, I came out of it. There was a bright glow across the fields, beyond some corn stalks, and it wasn't the morning sun. I put my hand over the sheriff's mouth and shook him.
Shh.
Hey, look over there.
It looks like a fire.
Yeah, just beyond the corn. Come on, quick and quiet.
What do you think it is?
Jeff Whalen, burning those clothes we've been looking for. We ran for the cornfield, and when we got into it, the light rustle of the morning wind in the stalks covered our approach. Came to the edge of the field and saw him, Jeff Whalen, dumping kerosene on a pile of smoldering cloth.
Look, Jase. Those boards in that hole.
An old well covered over. He dumped the clothes in there last night. Now he's come back to burn them.
Must have been some water in the well. They're smoldering. They won't burn right.
They will if he keeps pouring kerosene on them long enough. Let's get him.
All right, Jeff.
What?
That's enough. Drop that can. Drop it, I said.
Well, sure. Sure, I'll drop it.
Watch it, Chase.
He threw the can onto the fire, and a sheet of flame leaped up between us like a blinding flare. I dove across it, trying to clear my eyes.
Look out, Case. He's got a knife.
I was on him before I saw him. The blade flashed. I dug for my gun, but I couldn't bring it up in time. The knife slashed into my shoulder and went to the ground. He landed on top of me, but as he raised his hand to strike, I got my gun free with my left hand and slapped the barrel against the side of his head.
You all right, Case?
Yeah. I guess my...
This shirt will need a little stitching, though.
Your shoulder will need a little stitching, too. Couldn't risk a shot. You were too close.
Yeah, come on. Gotta stamp that fire out before all the evidence is burned.
Well, that's only kerosene on the ground burning.
I kicked what we need out of the fire. Plenty left for your lab to work on.
Good thinking, Sheriff.
Coming too, Jace.
Yeah. All right, Jeff. Come out of it. Come on.
What'd you jump me for? I was only burning some old thing.
Yeah, we know. The old things you happened to be wearing when you killed your brother.
You were right about that bread knife, Jason. Look, here's what he used on you.
Mm-hmm. Got nervous about that, too, didn't you, Jeff? Decided to get rid of everything and let old Uncle Joe ride for you.
Now, look, you're crazy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah? I talk kind of a foreign language. But maybe the grand jury will understand me when they indict you for murdering your brother. Come on. Get on your feet. Move.
Jeff Whalen was tried and convicted for the brutal knife murder of his brother Frank. On August 2nd, 1940, at Huntsville Penitentiary, he died in the electric chair.
This is Joel McCrae wishing you all a very, very happy new year. Good night, folks. See you next week.
Next week, Joel McCrae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McCrae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production Saddle Tramp. Tonight's cast included Tony Barrett, Tom McKee, Parley Bear, Peggy Weber, Roy Glenn, Wilms Herbert, and Rye Billsbury. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Hal Gibney speaking.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.